Hi, this is Michelle Anderson, and I'm here at Starbucks in Bangor with Paul LePage, the current mayor of Waterville, who is running for governor for the state of Maine.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Good. Wonderful. Nice to be here.
So let me just start by asking what I ask every candidate. Why do I want to vote for you?
I think you want to vote for me for a couple of reasons. One is I have a business career, and I've proven that I've been successful there. I've been in local government, community government, and county government, and I feel I've been very successful there. And most importantly, I'm outside of Augusta, and it's time to change blood.
That could be a plus. So what issues do you see as important, first of all, for the state of Maine?
I think the most important things in the state of Maine, the people of Maine are severely underemployed. Many are unemployed. And I think that we need to create an atmosphere in Augusta that is pro-business, not anti-business. That's one area that I feel is very, very important. Secondly, the state of Maine is 12th in the nation as far as educational spending, but 36th in the nation as results. I think we need to work on that. We need to get ourselves at least get the spending so that we're in the middle of the pack and get our aspirations and our education and the way we prepare kids to the middle of the pack, or if not above. I'd like to switch. I'd like to be in the bottom third of spending and the top third is results.
Do you have any earth-shattering ideas of how that's accomplished?
I will have by next week.
Okay, great.
that is one of the areas that we're fine-tuning right now.
Well, let me ask you a couple questions about Northern Maine, and then I'd like to get back to the generalities of all of Maine. You know a little about LURC and what goes on with LURC up in Northern Maine?
The Land Use Regulation Commission. Early in my career, I used to have to basically live in their office. I come out of the paper and lumber industry, and LURC has many regulations over it. Frankly, I think many of the policies in the state of Maine, in Augusta, are too much government, not enough flexibility to work with the business community. We have now lost our paper industry. We've lost our agricultural industry. I think it's time that we have reasonable regulations based on science, not based on politics.
Do you think it's possible to regain those two industries in the state?
Yes.
You
absolutely
do?
Believe so. We have a state's 34,000 square miles. 90% of it is forest. And currently we are not cutting the annual growth of our forest. We need to find ways to cut the annual growth. We need to harvest our forest before it falls apart. And because it before it decays. And what I mean by that is I look at a forest just like I look at a garden. If you plant a garden, you let it grow, and you don't reap the benefit of the vegetables, the leaves fall over, the vegetables fall on the ground, they decay, and they go away. Our forest is very much the same thing. It's just it takes 60 years to grow a forest, and it takes you 90 days or 120 days to grow a garden. But the concept is very, very much the same thing. A forest has to be managed. In Maine, we have a variety, a variety of species. Some species need to be harvested or they die, they get infected by disease, and they fall over, and it decay in the woods, and then you get new growth. I understand that, but what if we can benefit, if we can prosper by harvesting when the forest is ready and plant new seedlings so that we continue the process, I think we could be a very prosperous state. I think Maine 20 years ago, 25 years ago, was much more prosperous than it is today.
Have you given any thought to a county form of government in the state of Maine?
Yes. And the way I look at county is some parts of our society or our system can be a county government, other parts of it, no. And what I mean by that is areas of public safety, I believe, could be county-wide, and we could save a lot of money. Our jails, I was not in favor of the consolidation because I think consolidating all the county jails to one state-run, they tell me it's going to be more efficient in time. Certainly the consolidation hasn't shown that it's going to be more efficient. Now we're transporting people much further, much longer distances. I'm not so sure that that is a good idea. I believe parts of our educational system should be controlled at the county level. I firmly believe that if we had 16 superintendents, we'd be better off in controlling the facilities, the busing, the nutritional aspect, and the information technology aspect. I think if that was done on a county-wide basis, and you left the schools to have their local school boards and their own, develop their own curriculum, I think we would be better off as a state.
So how do you feel, ancillary to that, how do you feel about the consolidation that's been mandated by the state?
I think conceptually, I think it was necessary, because if we don't do something, we're going to tax ourselves into oblivion. As I already stated, we are 12th in the nation in spending, 36 in the nation in results. So we're top third in spending, the bottom third in results. We need to find a way to get the bottom third to the top third and get the top, the spending under control and down into the middle or to the bottom third. I think we can do that with out-of-classroom type of consolidations. Now, another thing, the governor said we're consolidating because we're going to save a lot of money at the administrative level. Well, the first few years I was mayor, we worked with Messalonsky, Winslow, and Waterville tried to do a consolidation long before the governor ever came up with the idea. And strangely enough, we found that the savings at the administrative level was roughly about 10%. The real saving is in the curriculum. It's in the classroom. And how do you do that? Well, for instance, to give you an example, Winslow has a French teacher who teaches French 5. Waterville has a French teacher who teaches French 5. Waterville has 5 students. Winslow has 4 students, 2 teachers. I believe if we consolidated the languages to maybe one school, you could have a German teacher and a French teacher. You'd probably have 8 students, 9 students in each class. Much better off than having 2 teachers teaching the same thing, and you're just it's just an overlap. It's
so you would have the French students from one school go to the other school for French class?
Correct.
And vice versa.
And vice versa.
One French teacher, one German teacher.
One French teacher. Now we've improved curriculum. Mm-hmm. We haven't added cost.
Excellent. Excellent. Why don't you tell me your feelings about Tabor?
Tabor, as it's currently written, I am a very, very strong proponent. And this is why. Schools under the consolidation now have to go to referendum. All the budgets have to go to referendum. Anytime the state goes out for bond issues, we've got to go to referendum. All Tabor does, and Tabor is less restrictive than schools. Every school budget has to go to referendum, whether you're increasing or decreasing. Mm-hmm. What Tabor says is, look, elected officials, we will let you grow the government at the rate of inflation. If you expect to grow more than that, you need to come and ask us permission. My analogy, I'll give you a very quick home analogy. My wife, my spouse, Ann, controls all the money. I get an allowance every week.
I'll vote for you right now.
If she goes to my wallet and she grabs $20 to get milk and bread and cookies or whatever, not a big thing. But if she gives in one hand and takes it all away in the next and doesn't ask permission, I'll get upset.
That makes sense to me. Okay. So you're, what do you think of the laptop program?
Useless.
Okay. What about Dirigo?
Dirigo is the biggest tax increase on the people of the state of Maine and the people that can least afford it. And what I mean by that, last year, when our company renewed its health insurance, we had 402 people. Our company pays the majority of the premium, whether you're single, your family, whatever. Whatever the premium is, we pay roughly 70-75% of it, whatever that number is. After we renewed, we had to take a 20% increase in health care. We dropped from 402 people covered to 334 covered. Now, it's available. It's unaffordable. What does Dirigo do? It charges us a surcharge of 2.3% on those who pay for health insurance. That's wrong. It's simply wrong. There's a better way to do it. And the better way to do it is, one, we have to learn to provide mandates that are affordable. The state legislature has attempted to provide Cadillac coverage with Volkswagen pocketbook, and it doesn't work that way. You've got to pay for what you can afford. Just like at the end of the month, I have to pay my bills. If I can't afford to drive a Lexus, I drive a Toyota, and that's the way it works. Dirigo was a good experiment. It failed. Now they're scurrying around, robbing every bank account, every account that they can, to provide enough money to keep it going. It was supposed to insure 180,000 people. I believe it's insuring somewhere around 15,000 people. It's just not working. The other thing that's very wrong with Dirigo. In the state of Maine, if there is no residency requirement, if you get to the state of Maine before City Hall closes, they have to provide for you if you're homeless or without money. You go to Dirigo. When we speak of Dirigo, it encourages people to come to Maine. We have no residency requirement. Nobody's going to be refused medical care, but somebody's going to pay for the medical. Who pays? Those who have insurance. So, we as a state need to learn to take care of our own and protect our people, not allow everybody in. This current administration, about in the first term, put out an executive order that essentially says, illegal aliens, we're not going to help you to get into Maine, but once you're here, we'll take care of you. Well, that says that's compassionate to the illegal alien, but not very compassionate to those who have to pay the bill.
Okay. What do you think needs to be done in order to make our state more attractive to business owners?
Got to stop taxing and raising fees on every possible thing. For instance, I don't know if you know this, but in the state of Maine, in the last legislature, a law was passed that if you have a pet, a dog, and you want to have the dog have a litter of pups before you have them spayed, because some vets say that's better for the animal, for your pet. In the state of Maine, you can do that, but you have to give the animals away. You cannot sell them. If you sell them, you have to register with the state and get a license. I think that's outrageous.
I hadn't heard about that.
Another one. 5 years ago, you would open a new business. You go to the code enforcement officer of your community, and you go to the fire chief. He comes in. They look to make sure it's safe. They make sure that you're in compliance with all the codes of the city, and they give you an occupancy permit. Now in the state of Maine, you do the same thing with the community, but you also have to call Augusta, have the fire marshal come in, agree with the fire chief, and then charge you $500.
So we're just getting money everywhere we can,
right.
You're saying.
Give you another example.
Mm-hmm.
You get an old building, Martin's, General Manager Martin's, and we opened a store. In the state of Maine, the store had been empty. It was an old Ames store. The store was empty. We go up into the eaves, and there's nests of pigeons in there. It's illegal in the state of Maine to go in and remove the pigeons. You have to call the state. They send up a biologist. He kills all the pigeons, removes the nest, and charges you $900.
Did they give a reason for that?
They don't want to have owners be cruel to animals. But they can be cruel to business people.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. Okay.
I got lots more.
I'm sure you do. Well, are you aware of the fact that you probably are, judging from what you've said already, the fact that the state of Maine doesn't have any the federal cap on welfare is 60 months on any individual. Mm-hmm. Maine is one of two states that don't.
That's correct.
Is there anything that you think we should do about that, or
absolutely,
how should we handle that?
Two things. I think welfare needs to be severely reformed. One, there needs to be a time limit. Absolutely, I fully agree. There needs to be a start, and it needs to be an end in sight. Secondly, that the state of Maine does very, very wrong. Now, and I'm going to tell you this from somebody who's been there. I was born and brought up with 18 children. I'm one of the eldest. I lived on welfare the first 10 years of my life. And what the state does is it's all or nothing. If you're on welfare, and I'll just use a number. Let's say you're a young mother, divorced, unwed, whatever, you have two children. Mm-hmm. Make $9 an hour. Well, you get food stamps, you get heat assistance, you get rental assistance. That's fine. Happy. We're all happy. However, your employer gives you an increase of 25 cents. If you take it, you lose everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not staggered. It's not a situation where if you get a quarter, okay, we'll reduce your benefits by 10 cents or 15 cents, but you get a little bit more and you get ahead. It's all or nothing. I know that at least 6 or 8 times a year, I try to give an increase to employees. I can't take it, I'll lose my benefits. Well, you need to change the system so we encourage our people to work hard, to get ahead, and from there we don't take all the increase, we take a little bit at a time. And then we set a base, that what I call a living wage. When you reach that and you can sustain yourself and your children, you don't need to be on welfare.
Sort of like training wheels.
Exactly, just like training wheels, just like giving your children an allowance and teaching them how to spend it wisely, and you grow up and they're big, strong contributors to society. Right now, it's all or nothing. I can't tell you how many times people on SSI, people who are disabled, people with mental illness, people that have not skilled trades, that need assistance. If you reach a certain point, they cut you off all at once. They do not stage it so that you can get ahead and you can see the benefits of working hard. And so I would have a system where we have a bottom, we have a top, and we have a plan that we stage the increases and decreases so that every time you get a little increase from your employer, you keep a portion of that, and you don't lose all your benefits. I'd also have a start and a finish. I believe in giving a helping hand when it's necessary. I don't believe in giving a complete handout.
Great. What about use tax?
I spent, in 1998, we had a severe ice storm, if you recall.
I do.
So, a lot of people were out of their homes, so they had to go to group places, and in Waterville, Colby College made their gymnasium available to people that were homeless, that had lost power, had no heat. So we at Martin's, we donated a truckload of mattresses, a truckload of water, and we donated at that same year, just happened to be that same year, we had donated a small bulldozer to a community college. At the end of the year, the state came in and audited us and said, well, you took it out of inventory, you changed its use, so you owe us 5% sales tax.
On a donation?
On a donation. So I was pretty upset. It took me 3 years, but I worked with the Maine Merchants Association and they sponsored a bill, and we finally got the law changed. Now that doesn't happen anymore. But the state has a very strange way of defining change of inventory. There are several of those that they do. For instance, another law in the state of Maine that I absolutely despise because it goes to the state is if you sell a gift card,
mm-hmm.
if somebody doesn't get the money, that they don't use it after a certain period of time, you don't get to keep the money. You have to send it to the state. It's
really?
Called, yes. You have
the store owner or the
store owner has to
send that money to the state?
The store owner has to write a check to the state for whatever amount of abandoned, they call it abandoned property.
Wow. And how do they justify that? Or how do they try to justify that?
They need more money.
Oh, okay. What other things do you think are important for people to know about you and your what you would do as governor?
What I would do as governor, one of the most critical things in the state, and many candidates, both independents, Republicans, Democrats, nobody has a monopoly on it. What they will do is they will tell you, we need jobs. And I will tell you the same thing, we need jobs. However, as governor, if I create jobs, they will be government jobs. I don't agree with that. I don't think we need more government jobs. I think we need less government jobs. I think we need limited government, less people working off the backs of the taxpayer. What a governor really can do and should do is provide an environment and programs and policies that invite people to use their entrepreneurship, to use their creativity, to take the risk of hiring people and have a vision to prosper. Government's role is to help them do that, not sit back and wait until they do and then tax them out of business.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and I hope I get to interview you again as the season goes on.